last Tuesday, Trump met with Netanyahu in the White House, and Netanyahu begged Trump to restart the war. The Israelis will not help the United States in our limited and contained war against Iran because the Israelis want an unlimited war against Iran. The United States is currently bombing Iran in a limited way as a form of pressure to try to get Iran back to the negotiating table to make a deal. In other words, we see the Iranian regime surviving, and this is implied because we're trying to make a deal with them. We're trying to make a deal with them where we're going to satisfy some limited strategic objectives. We're not seeking some sort of total victory where we decapitate the regime and kill the leadership. And this is anathema to the Israelis. The Israelis don't want to make a deal with Iran. They don't want the Islamic Revolutionary Regime to exist. And so to make a deal with them presupposes that we recognize that will be the governing authority in perpetuity. So the Israelis have been telling us they have no interest in fighting this limited war where we're trying to increase pressure so we could get a deal and then we can walk away. The Israelis are saying we're not going to help unless you satisfy our objectives, which are unlimited and total. We want you to join us in knocking out Iran completely and overthrowing the regime. So Netanyahu came to the White House on Tuesday to beg the president for this. Netanyahu asked Trump to restart the war with a huge military campaign aimed at degrading Iran's military and ultimately leading to the end of the regime. Well, what happens on Tuesday at the same time that Netanyahu is meeting with Trump is that Iran is launching offensive strikes on Jordan. Iran's proxies are launching attacks on Saudi Arabia. They're launching attacks on U.S. vessels at a port in the Suez Canal in Egypt. And so what this is doing is that it's pitting the U.S. allies against each other. Think about it. Israel is begging the United States to widen the war against Iran, escalate the war against Iran. Israel's begging the United States to topple the Iranian regime and hit them harder than we've ever hit them. Simultaneously, the Saudis are begging the United States to do the opposite. The Saudis are begging the U.S. to de-escalate. And so on Thursday, Trump met with Mohammed bin Salman, Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, and MBS from Saudi said, we would prefer that you de-escalate. It was actually on the order of Saudi Arabia. Trump explicitly said this to the press. He said, we were locked and loaded, ready to bomb Iran. He said, but our allies didn't want us to. Trump said, and you sort of have to listen to your allies, so we're giving Iran another chance. The Saudis were pressuring the United States to de-escalate. And how is Iran doing this? Well, Iran told the United States that in the event we do this all-out attack on Iran, let's say the U.S. launches this biggest strike since World War II, we bomb their missiles and defense industry. Iran communicated publicly to the United States. If that attack goes through, Iran spelled out every single target they would hit and in what order they would hit them. And all those targets were Saudi oil infrastructure targets. Iran said, first, we're going to destroy Saudi Arabia's largest oil refinery. Then we're going to destroy their second biggest oil refinery. Then we're going to destroy all the LNG in Qatar. And Iran basically went down the list and said, we are going to destroy all of the critical infrastructure that is the economic engine of Saudi Arabia and every other Gulf country. Also happens to be 20% of the world's oil supply that will be permanently, irreversibly taken offline. And obviously, this creates even more pressure on Saudi Arabia. It puts more pressure on Qatar, on the Emirates, which then in turn puts pressure on the United States. And so it's very interesting how Iran is really playing five-dimensional chess, playing all the countries off of each other.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, My Decision. and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back to the War Room Live on the Alex Jones Network. I am your host, Rex Jones. Harrison was just on. My dad's going to be back later this week. Really appreciate everyone joining me on the network. I've got a real angel on your shoulder, devil on your shoulder story today. Will Trump off-ramp? Will there be a peace deal or refinement of the past MOU that was violated by the U.S.? Or will there be total war? This is kind of the duality that we're facing right now. I want to show everybody overhead shot, please. This is the big news of today, August 4th, 2026. Indian vessel sinks after being struck by projectile near Yemen waters. All seafarers rescued. Thank God, of course. Let's just minimize all these international incidents that happen, you know, every single day now that everyone overlooks. According to India's Minister of Ports, Shipping and Waterways, all 14 seafarers are rescued by Yemen's Coast Guard. A ship off the port of Aden, where traffic remained steady after the Iran-aligned Houthis said their forces had carried out missile and drone strikes on Saudi oil tankers in Aden, Yemen. There's a tanker right there. An Indian vessel sank near Yemeni waters after being struck by an unknown projectile on Tuesday. India's Ministry of External Affairs condemned the attacks and blah, blah, blah. I just want to point out things like this are happening, you know, every other day. You know, we have the Yanbu pipeline under attack. Keep in mind, the Bab al-Mandeb is not closed. The Strait of Hormuz is closed only to Saudi Arabian traffic, Israeli traffic, and American traffic. Ships that, you know, comply with the New World Order that the new regional power Iran is trying to implement, they're able to get through or to negotiate new routes. And the discussion is going to be whether or not Iran can negotiate with Oman and reach an understanding on a shared control of that waterway. Because things are not going back to a pre-February 28th world order. And joining me to talk about that in the next segment here, I'm kind of warming everything up. I want to talk about all these things because I got a lot of questions for him, is a former Green Beret, geopolitical analyst expert, Anthony Aguilar. He'll be joining me. So you want to stay here until the next segment for that at the bare minimum, because you need to hear the truth about these things. I mean, we got Europe set to go in. Iran ways allowing Europe to clear mines and Strait of Hormuz. A lot of people don't know this. One of the few areas of the U.S. Navy that we really heavily require, you know, an ability to outsource, an ability to have another country do something for us instead of vice versa, is really our ability to mine sweep. And I think Trump has said it himself. Oh, they just toss one little mine in and then you can't go in. Yes, because you can talk about the reality of getting a blockade and fighting them at sea and having these grand battles, but that's not what really matters. What really matters is commercial traffic returning to levels seen before the war? Anything like marginally comparable? Like 10% would be wonderful. It's like 5 to 10 ships a day, Strait of Hormuz, I believe, and its normal traffic was like over 150. Like, do you realize how bad that is for everyone around the world? Just because we're insulated doesn't mean they are. And when I read you this story about the Indian vessel sinking, maybe you're like, oh, I don't care. Screw India. It is what it is. No, we're screwed. Like, do you understand? These people are desperately trying to find energy, just like the Europeans, just like the Chinese, just like our allies, the South Koreans and the Japanese who are dying right now because they can't afford the energy because the energy prices make their inflation go up because they have to import literally everything to have a modern society, to have, you know, the beautiful country of Japan that we know today, right? So it's we're balanced on like the head of a pin, and then people are like making jokes about it and want to play games about it and want to say it's not happening. And if you just kind of like say, oh, well, everyone says Strait of Hormuz, such a thing. Like, whatever's going to happen, I don't need to stay informed. I don't need to know. You need to know because they're going to lie to you. Like, could be tomorrow, the next day, the next week, the next month, whatever. They're going to lie to you and send your kids, send your relatives, send your family and friends off to go die for Israel in this war that they manufactured. And if you're not aware of not just what's happening here, but what's happening around the world and why this is the number one political issue right now and everything else is downstream of it. I had that conversation with Andrew Wilson, and we're talking about domestic versus foreign policy. Foreign policy is everything. You can't have a domestic policy without a foreign policy. Oh, no, no, no. We have the great geography. We have the great relationship with the weak countries, north and south, fish to our east and west. That's an Otto von Bismarck quote. Sure, sure, sure. But we created a global reality. We were the globalists. We were the ones that enforced the Zionist world order with our Zionist occupied government. And we had to project force thousands of miles away for far longer than we should have. And we don't have the same military that we had in 1991. Look at this. Trump cut out of New Deal to reopen Strait of Hormuz. Iran and Oman close to finalizing agreement that would see commercial ships charged for passage. Yeah, and it's going to be, it's interesting. It's actually illegal to make it like an official toll. Like, you can't do that. It's against international law and stuff. So they're going to do like the same thing they do for the Suez and other places. It's going to be an environmental fee, management fee, you know, traffic fee, like whatever they're going to say. They're going to enforce payment. And it's not really even necessarily about the payment per se. Like, the payment, of course, countries, they want to get rich. Iran wants the money, needs the money, desperately been sanctioned forever. I'm sure Oman would love to have the money too. That whole region, they like to have the cash. But it's really about control, and it's about demonstrating control, and it's about taking that control from Israel and the United States, who tried to take it for themselves. Because prior to the war, no one controlled it. The Strait of Hormuz was open traffic, free to shipping. It was an international waterway. Now it's going to become, you know, regional territorial water. There's an argument, I'm sure, some international law lawyer would go, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And you'd be right. You know what? I don't know exactly the minutia of it, but I understand the concept of that not returning to its original state. And people that are academics and smart and all this stuff, they're still caping, thinking like that we can return to pre-war conditions. That's never going to happen. Like, when they're making Lego videos of you, it's basically over. It's basically over. That's been incredibly effective, by the way. Suleiman, the guy who I've had on the show many times, international journalist, he actually interviewed the people responsible for making those videos. You can watch that on Moral Resistance. Give that a little plug. So we got the Europeans potentially to come in to clear the mines or whatever. I don't even believe that, but it is what it is. We've got the Indian vessel sinking, going down. Let's do a little angel on the shoulder. Let's talk about Trump speaking with the Emir of Qatar. Ooh, very important guy. About de-escalating U.S.-Iran tensions. And that's Trump right here, overhead shot. Please give him a little pitchfork here. Nice little pitchfork there. Give him a goatee, really round it out. There we go. And, you know, he's got an angel thing here, but, you know, maybe he's got a tail too. All right. U.S. President Donald Trump held a phone call today earlier with Qatari Emir Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, during which the pair discussed efforts to de-escalate tensions between the U.S. and Iran. The latter's office says Trump and Sheikh Tamim talked about bridging remaining differences between the U.S. and Iran in order to reach a sustainable diplomatic solution to the crisis, according to the Qatari readout. Here's the reality, what you need to know about what that means right now. The Gulf states, whether that's Qatar, whether that's Saudi Arabia, whether that's Bahrain, they can't take it anymore. UAE, they can't take it anymore. They're literally, it's a glass house, and then you have your, like, crazy drunk friend who, like, bribes you, hey, throw these rocks. And you're like, well, no, that makes no sense. That's what they're telling him. MBS said, please stop. The Emir of Qatar said, please stop. And maybe he listens, maybe he doesn't. I don't really think it's up to Trump at this point. Tamim stressed the importance of sticking to diplomacy and ensuring all parties adhere to the commitments made in the MOU. Oh, that's funny. Oh, all the commitments made in the MOU. What does that mean? Oh, ceasefire? Ceasefire in Lebanon? That got violated. Can't do that. No blockade? Immediate pullback of the blockade? No blockade for you? Oh, we got a blockade for you. Oh, sanctions relief. This is a big carrot we always do. sanctions, we're going to pull that. And we don't even have the authority to do it. We promise things that we can't even do. But the main idea, the main problem that we face is that we told ships via the British Maritime Authority to turn their transponder off and then to go through an alternative route than what was proposed in the MOU and what Trump signed on to, right? And that was the Persian Gulf Strait Authority. This is all stuff that we agreed to, all right? And then we violated it, and then we said that they violated it. And because we're the U.S. and we control the universe, we get to speak that into reality. I don't really think that's how it works. And maybe that would be how it worked if we did have a king, we did have an emperor or empress or queen or something, right, that ran the country. But we live in a constitutional republic. We have a representative democracy. These people don't represent the interests of the people that voted for them. Because even if this was a war of conquest to take all the resources and have the American empire and do whatever, that's not what the American people voted for. That is a lot closer to what Kamala Harris promised than versus what Donald Trump promised in 2024. But it's exactly what Donald Trump gave us. Think about that. All this stuff we're talking about, the complete insanity day by day. He is King George III. Netanyahu is King George III. Trump's like a regional governor or whatever. But it is the old timey aristocratic attitude, really just thinking that you can get away with all this and get away with violating your campaign promises in such an extreme way as to where, like, the fallout is already here. The fallout's already happening. I read a thing yesterday about the Groypers coming for the party. And like people say, oh, they're coming. They're already here. Like, they're all around you. They're in the walls. Like, it's over for you, establishment. And it doesn't matter how many people fall or get taken out or whatever. It doesn't matter. There's going to be thousands, tens of thousands, millions of Groypers. And that's just the reality. So when you try to fight against that by taking us to yet another neocon war in the Middle East, try to kill more of us or tax more of us or get more of us to kill ourselves or hurt ourselves or do whatever due to this horrible economy, kill our businesses, hurt our families so we can't have children, it only makes the younger generation that much angrier and that much more aware of what has been taken from all of us. This is what we're really starting to get in touch with. And when the unks do the thing, oh, young man, you can't even talk about it. Oh, it's so privileged to even talk about it. We have really been targeted and hurt by the system in a way that you have not, because we grew up under mass media surveillance and propaganda. And due to that, we have an awareness of where we see it everywhere in our lives to a degree where we see the news, we see the liars, we see the people that actually run our government, our Zionist occupied government. We see our King Benjamin Netanyahu visit and all these older people with all the grand strategy and the master plans. And I have the knowledge. I have the truth. All of that stuff, they fall for it. Literally every single time they fall for it. So regardless of your age, regardless of your demographic, regardless of whatever, we have to, as Americans, wake up to this. And it is the young people specifically that are waking up to it, because we don't want to be drafted. They are running AI simulation bids, and they're going to have this done by August 15th. So like within under 2 weeks now, they're going to have the simulations done, or at least ready to be run. And then after that, oh, who knows what's going to happen? Oh, you crazy. It's never going to happen. Trying to be a victim, trying to be a panican. Shut up. Like, what are you, 48 years old? You're not getting drafted. I'm 23. And there are millions of young Americans that feel this way. And if you throw us to the wayside, which the GOP, which Trump have already done or has already done, when you treat us this way, we will never return. And this is the problem that they have. It's like, you're selling us poison. And it doesn't matter what the flavor of poison is. And, you know, the Democrats are selling you a dog turd and that's poison too. And our thing tastes good, but it's still a dog turd. We're not eating dog doo-doo anymore. We're not Laura Loomer eating the dog food anymore. We're not eating the dog food the GOP and the Democrats give us. There has to be a better alternative. Because if there isn't an alternative, like where do you go where you can vote against it? I really want to know. Oh, well, you got to go here because we got to keep our gun rights and our abortion rights and all this stuff. What's going to happen when the Democrats come in and they're able to pass all their insane policies because people on the right didn't stick by their guns, didn't stick by their values, and didn't do what they said they were going to do when they got elected? Will it be the voters' fault again? Oh, well, the voter, you didn't get what you wanted under the Republicans. Oh, they hey, buddy, we tried our best for you. We did as good a job we could. It's like a George Bush. Wait, fool me once, can't be fooled again. And then, oh, the Democrats are going to hurt you because you didn't vote hard enough. You know, you didn't manage your decline hard enough. You didn't check into hospice long enough. You just want to get it over with. Like, either way, you're killing yourself. That's really what all this is. So I'm not saying I have the solution. That's right. You know, here's the thing. You know, it's funny. Once you get older, you realize if I had just had orange hair and I just done spray tanned myself, and I said, look, if I made those towers fall or I let it happen, whenever it happened, Netanyahu would pay me to do it. It's all irrelevant now. I think I could have gotten away with more if I looked like Trump. That's my George Bush impression. I'll workshop that more, but it's Orange W. Bush. It's a big problem. The youth sees it. I don't understand how a lot of the older people don't see it. I know a lot of the older people do as well. Not trying to discriminate. For some reason, when I say the word boomer, people treat me like I'm saying the N-word, okay, with a hard R or something, but I'm not. I'm just saying the neocon spirit tends to originate from that generation of politician, and they've been responsible for what's happened in this country, and the youth are ready to vote against it. Like, I'm just going to read this real quick. I see it right here. Robert Kagan, this is like a think tank guy, establishment guy, real neocon here. Sometimes U.S. intervention is worth blowback. Is he over there right now? Let's just say, I bet he's not. Let's say this guy is a Purple Heart, like five-star general, Master Chief, Space Marine commander. Go back to him, overhead shot. He ain't over there right now. He's like 65 years old. He's morbidly obese, and he wants you to go die for Israel. And I'm sure he's got, you know, a lot of, the hawkish historian. What does that mean? Pro-genocide monster? I just assume. You know, I'm just assuming here. I'm just speculating here. I'll read a little bit of it. Oh, he's a considerable influence to push regime change against Saddam Hussein. Are you undergoing a conversion? Is that fair? I don't think so, because I never denied that blowback was a reality. In fact, my writing shows that when the U.S. is out there acting in the world, Americans tend not even to be aware of the effect of American power in other nations, so they're constantly shocked whenever the use of American power leads to a response. The best example is Japan and Pearl Harbor. Many Americans acted like out of the blue. It was out of the blue when Japan attacked us, when in fact the U.S. pursued policies that likely led to Japanese attack. That is true. But we knew the attack was coming, Robert. And that's the reality. It's just like, I support intervention, I support war over and over again. Yes? Well, all right. So let me try to find a quote here. To answer your question, I haven't really fundamentally changed my mind. These are different circumstances. You'd have to assume that I had some kind of doctrine of always invading the Middle East whenever possible, but that has not been my doctrine. In 2003, all right, so this is what everyone's going to do. Pay attention here. This is what I was looking for. In 2003, I thought invading Iraq was justified. I'm ashamed to say that I had such poor judgment. The Iraq war was unnecessary. And then Kagan says, you say it was unnecessary because you don't take seriously the nature of the threat that was posed. What nature, or what was the threat that Saddam posed, the interviewer says? He was a tinpot dictator with the hollowed out military. I don't agree with you. He was not just a tinpot dictator. He was actually special. He had already committed two major acts of aggression against his neighbors. By the way, that's something Iran has never done. Saddam had invaded Iran. He had invaded Kuwait. He says that, dude, we had Saddam invade Iran. We funded and ran the Iran-Iraq war. He says that as if that's some mark against Saddam Hussein. That's the entire point. He was our good boy. He was our soldier. He did what we told him to do. We gave him the chemical weapons and then used the pretext of having the chemical weapons as a means to invade. Think about that. So like this is what, we're not listening to unks anymore, man. These unks have literally led us to hell. Literally led us to hell, and it's just paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of him justifying and making excuses and talking about, you know, American power, American hegemony. All these things are gone. These people spent the political capital literally for no reason in the desert. You think about it. Your grandchildren and your great-great-grandchildren's future that they could have had, that you could have had, just as a family, everyone together, they're taking that from you right now. And they're giving you Trump and Laura Loomer and Mike Huckabee. Does that seem like a fair, equitable exchange? Look at this. The company's making billions from the Iran war. Go ahead and scroll down. We already know about Trump and not just the Iran war and the consequences of that and just general war expanding. You have to look at the element of, well, when your sons get a drone contract, when they get a tungsten contract, when they get a metals contract, that doesn't just happen out of thin air. Oil and gas, we all know this. Critical minerals, we all know this. We're all aware of what's going on. Money has itself become more expensive. But we will revisit all of this and more with Anthony Aguilar coming up. I really want to talk to him about what's going on when it comes to the Indian vessel that was hit, and of course the 14 sailors that were saved, who might be responsible for that attack and why, and of course the attack on Kuwait. Crew, see if we can find more information about what happened in Kuwait. If we can find more information on that, that would be great. These stories are so breaking and so new, I haven't seen coverage of them. I've seen articles and some things, of course, but it hasn't really gone mainstream. I think I have, let's see here. We got 3 minutes left on the clock. Do I have that Eric Doherty clip? No, I'm going to save that for Anthony. That's just too good. I've got the Fox News people doing some pretty wild stuff. And the reality of that is just not going to last much longer because you have shows like this. You have all the other geopolitical interview shows and just other daily broadcasts as to where if you don't have ideological consistency and you're not constantly covering these issues and covering these topics, then it's just not going to end well for you because you'll be shown as to, hey, you know, you did support this war and now you're saying you don't. It's just like that guy in the article. He's like, oh, I'm reasonable now. I'm the interviewer. I'm looking for the truth. Sure. Like that's reality. Like that's real. You're just somebody looking to couch a point. You're looking to try to be brave while remaining inside the framework of the system. You must break your chains. You must break your bonds. You must be crazy, be insane. Pull it up, The Way of the Samurai. We got to do it in the last 2 minutes here. The Way of the Samurai is in desperation. It's Lord Nagayoshi, I believe. The Way of the Samurai. If you look that up, it'll pull up an image. And it even has an InfoWars image as well, still in Google Images. I have that printed out in my garage. 10 men or more cannot kill such a man. Loyalty and diligence are themselves found within desperation. And, you know, who's more desperate? The Americans, we're sitting over here worried about stock market, worried about domestic oil situation, worried about, you know, our creature comforts and our first world problems. And then the Iranians, who have been fighting literally proxy groups, powers allied against them by the U.S. for, as Trump says all the time, 47 years. Who is more likely to come out on top of that situation? I'm going to have Anthony Aguilar, Lieutenant Colonel, Green Beret, very accomplished geopolitical analyst as well, on all the big shows. I'll have him joining me shortly here in about 3 minutes after the break. We're going to get into all of this and more. I want to get his predictions and I want to get his commentary specifically on what's happening in Gaza right now, because this is not talked about enough. They're signaling new things about the border peace. Netanyahu has said that the IDF will only leave Gaza once the thing is dealt with or all the people are gone or whatever it is. All Hamas is gone and they declare all the people Hamas. And we've got clips of them saying, well, we're at 70%. All we have to do is clean or cleanse the remaining 30%. It's like cartoon villains, cartoon bad as you can be. We're going to be covering all of that and more after the break. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. I created Power Plant and Methyl Drive. Power Plant is basically the new, better version of Super Male Vitality. Check that out if you like that product from back in the day. I'll see you after this break. Do you want to try some?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. We'll send you some methylene blue. And if you guys want to get it too, you can get it from thealexjonesstore.com. I invented two proprietary products. Gavin, I'm a business owner, supplement formulator, Power Plant and Methyl Drive. You guys got to get them right now. Magnesium, CoQ10, PQQ, Rhodiola Roja, Golden Root. It's got the cordyceps, the zinc, the selenium. It's got the boron as well. Raise your free testosterone. Raise your ability to get through hard days and hard tasks. And ultimately raise the potential of the methylene blue that you're probably already taking if you're watching this network. We have that available for you. It's a really good deal, really good price. People just kind of across the internet have told me they've started taking it and they've been able to get to the gym again. They've been able to get through hard days at work again. Specifically, that power plant formula If you're looking for something like Super Male Vitality from back in the day, I basically invented a better version of that. That's called Power Plant. It's available solo or also in the Power Drive bundle at thealexjonesstore.com. Look up what proper magnesium does for your body. Look up what proper methylated vitamin B12 does for your body. All of that and more is in Power Plant and Methyl Drive, and you can get them all three together on the Power Drive bundle, along with the other phenomenal products. We have the turmeric. We've got the MK Ultra, which is a phenomenal multivitamin, also nootropic as well. Ultimate Burn. If you really, you're trying to lose a little bit of weight, here's the thing. I've been doing a good job. I'm almost down to like 205 now. If you want to join me on a weight loss journey, you can get yourself some Ultimate Burn. And all the other products we have, like Methylene Red specifically, are also great for that. Methylene Red also has that CoQ10. Get the turmeric, get the blue, get the gummies, get the colostrum. My grandma is not capping on jaw for real. It really helped her with her hair if you want it. We've got the T3 Trifecta Iodine, an absolute staple of the old network. We've got the Ultimate Sea Moss, Ultimate Turmeric, the Bovine Beef Tallow. It's got the Methylene Blue inside the tallow. Incredible antioxidant, Methylene Blue. I already went over it, tried to with Gavin a little bit. We've got the Zeolite, incredible for heavy metal support, dechelation, stuff like that. The Shilajit Complex, we've even got smelling salts. Ultimate Life Force, which is absolutely incredible. It's got the natokinase in there. It's got things theoretically to, you know, attenuate certain anecdotal things with the spike protein. Not making a health claim there. Talk to your doctor. It's just a top-rated formula for a reason. The Ultimate CMOS gummies in another form. The creatine, the ultimate power. We've got tons of sales on the different forms and flavors of the Ultimate Power pre-workout. We've got the NAD. We've got the Methyl Drive. We've got the MK Ultra. We've got Optimal Human. I got drink mixes for you. I got powders. I got energy gum. This is what you need. We have an electrolyte powder. It is so important in the summer months to get proper electrolyte support. And if you look at a lot of these blends on the grocery store shelf, they are pure garbage. Get yourself some Optimal Human. Get yourself some beef tallow. Get yourself some Atomic Defense. All of that and more is available at thealexjonesstore.com. I did not even mention the water filtration, the shower filtration that we have, the Patriot apparel that we have, the collectible coins memorabilia that we have, literally everything that you could ever want theoretically or practically to support this operation, you can get at thealexjonesstore.com. This is what makes us different. Other people do a show so they can sell a product. We sell the best products in the world so that we can do the best show in the world. That's what makes this operation completely different, completely viewer, listener, supported, funded, owned by you at home when you decide, when you choose to make the decision to support us and get the phenomenal products at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm telling you again, the Power Drive Bundle, Methyl Drive, Power Plant, Methylene Blue, that is like the trifecta.
Weeks and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back to the War Room. I am your host, Rex Jones, and we're covering Geopolitical Roundup, the latest news of the war, hopefully not resuming, but we've been talking about this for a while. It's not resuming. It's already happening, already started. World War E, World War Energy, World War Epstein. I'm being joined by Lieutenant Colonel and former Green Beret, Anthony Aguilar, also geopolitical analyst as well, commentator, all around internet guy. When it comes to stuff like that, you see him on Mario Newfall, you see him on channels like Dialogue Works and others. Anthony, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing phenomenal. I've got a ton of things I wanted to talk to you about. First off, what's happening with this Indian ship that was hit? We've got 14 people. They're all alive. Thank God. Who did this, Anthony? What happened there?
Well, the Indian ship that was passing through the Strait of Babelmandab, and as we talk about these things now that the Baba Mandab Strait is now becoming more part of the conversation, while the Strait of Hormuz is still very much a part of the conversation, let's not lose sight on the importance now that both strategic waterways, both strategic causeways are now having in terms of the overall global impact and the economic impact to not only the United States, but the world. So, you know, we've been discussing quite a bit over the last 5.5 months of this conflict, the Strait of Hormuz, which is here in the Persian Gulf that connects the Persian Gulf to the Gulf of Oman. Now what we're talking about.
Right. Hold on. One second. Crew, can we throw up a big old map? Let's throw up a big old map of the entire region. We'll take a little while to do that. Anthony, I want you to intro this. Yep. So we're talking about the two critical waterways, the Bab el-Mandeb and then the Strait of Hormuz. And people don't understand it. It's like the world is having a heart attack right now. It has heart disease. Go ahead and break that down.
Yeah, because, you know, the Strait of Hormuz is critically important for nations that draw resources, energy, fertilizer, helium, crude oil, refined oil, that either bring their goods into the Persian Gulf and or bring them out of the Persian Gulf, which is a large portion of the world. Now, the reason the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb is now creating more of a crisis economically, but also in terms of security now for the United States specifically and European nations, but more so if the United States hopes to continue to prosecute this war with Iran, is that the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb, which is, you know, off the coast.
Can you see that up there on the screen? Are you able to see ours there? So can you, walk us through what's going on?
We almost have the same map. So when you're looking here at the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb, here is Yemen. Across the causeway, you have Djibouti. And then within that, you know, the nations within the Red Sea. But what's particular now about the Bab el-Mandeb Strait is that it is more narrow than the Strait of Hormuz. Therefore, tactically, more control can be implemented. There aren't multiple routes. There's not a northern route. There's not a southern route. There's not an alternate route that the United States can sneak vessels through. It's very narrow. And on one side, you have Djibouti, and on one side, you have Yemen. The Yemeni port is very much so controlled by the Houthis. So within the Red Sea then connects to the Suez Canal in Sinai, Egypt, which then connects to the Mediterranean Ocean. So Europe, the United States, any Northern European country or Baltic country that has ships that come through the Mediterranean, through the Suez Canal, through the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb, to the Strait of Hormuz or to other ports in Central or Eastern Asia, now have to go either around Africa, the Cape of Good Hope, around the entirety of Africa, or take alternate routes, which simply add days or weeks to the voyage, or in some cases are completely unnavigable. So looking at the situation now with this Indian vessel that was struck and by all reports by the Indian government was sunk. That's the report that we have right now. Ship was hit, ship was sunk. The maritime sailors were rescued, thank God, but the ship was sunk. That was most likely done by the Ansar Allah or the Houthis. And
What was the intent of that attack?
Exactly. So if you're if you are the naval commander of the Houthi naval force and you are planning operations just like an American or an Iranian or a Israeli military commander would plan, you have your intent from higher headquarters, which is control the Strait of Hormuz. Do not allow any ships through unless we, Ansar Allah, via the voice of through the Houthi movement, you know, The Houthis are kind of the Houthis are more of the government arm. Ansar Allah is the military arm. Consider something comparable to the IRA and Sinn Féin. You have a government representative arm, which very much has representation in the government of Yemen, which the Houthis do. And then you have a military arm being that of Ansar Allah. So if you are the naval force commander of Ansar Allah forces along the Yemeni coast, the purpose for targeting and then sinking that ship is to send a very clear message. Because remember, we've talked about this before, Alex. The the elements of national power that every nation on earth exercises, whether they know it or not, every nation on earth, whether you're Yemen or you're the United States, exercise the dime, diplomacy, information, the military, and the economy. And within information, you have misinformation, you have disinformation, which we see the United States exercising a lot of disinformation, right, especially with Donald Trump.
Well, let me ask, because the picture that Trump paints of the Iranians, this is like, I call it the Looney Tunes war, because it's just so insane. It literally is the Lego video war on the other side. But for us, Trump will come out and say, like, they're obliterated, defeated, they have no military, whatever. But we see this like mosaic defense being implemented, not just of their country, but also of the other like axis of resistance powers like the Yemeni or Houthi, whatever you want to call them, or whatever we call them here. Do you think it's fair to say that the other axis of resistance countries have been factored into the Iranian mosaic defense plan? And what do you think of these recent attacks on Kuwait? I'm going to read this from the New York Times. Kuwait says it downed Iranian drones as Mideast braces for possible escalation. Kuwait said that Iranian forces had launched a wave of drone attacks on its shores early Saturday as the Middle East braced for a very possible situation or escalation in fighting after President Trump said he was preparing to hit Iran. Very technical term he uses here, Anthony, very hard. You know, that's our peace president for you. The Kuwaiti military said that it had detected and destroyed multiple drones in its airspace since dawn and that Iran had targeted critical infrastructure in the country's north. So this would be, you know, not a direct departure of policy because they have engaged in attacks that have not been retaliatory. But like, is this Iran? Is this not Iran? Is this, you know, maybe another country in the Middle East or us trying to escalate or start something up that wasn't happening? What's going on?
The phase or period of simply retaliatory attacks from Iran being the limit of attacks that we see in response from the from Iran, that phase, that timeline of war is over. Iran is now exercising their military capability throughout, which is now legitimate targets right, in the region. And consider that we've had, you know, when this war started, when we were talking about, okay, it's the United States and Israel versus Iran, and that's where we want to keep it. Well, as I've said from the 28th of February, this is a war that once started in the way that was started, preemptively, without justification, without provocation, done in a way that immediately escalated the war from just a finite goal to a massive conflict in the making, has now absolutely become that.
Yes.
Remember, this war was supposed to take a couple days or maybe a few weeks.
We're now going on to 6 months. You're being racist. We're not supposed to watch videos of what the president said when the war started. You're not telling the truth right now. This has been going on for 47 years, and it might take another 20 years because that's what I've seen, you know, the Air Force generals on Fox News say. No. But you're right. You can literally roll the tape of what they said, and they said that they would do this, Anthony, by killing the Pope. What do you think of that? Like the Islamic equivalent.
Yeah, the onset of this war, the operational and strategic process or what I would say tactics at the operational level, operational approach at the strategic level, were grossly underestimated by the United States, grossly overestimated U.S. capability, and grossly misunderstood and misinterpreted what Iran's response would be and how Iran would respond, but also the capability that Iran has. And I think it's interesting to note now that the attacks that we've seen in Kuwait are attacks anywhere within the region. I think it's interesting to see. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but it's kind of the breakdown of all of the missile capabilities that Iran has. And then the area to which all of these missile capabilities can reach, this being Iran, that outer ring being all the way up into northern Europe, all the way into Central Africa, all the way into East Asia. And so everything from the Fatah 360 missile all the way up to the Qamshir 4, which can range up to 2,500 kilometers, is far outside the range of what any U.S. European or Israeli interceptor can intercept. The best we got in terms of ballistic long-range interception is the THAAD land-based system, the Aegis sea-based system, or the Patriot interceptor missile system, which to intercept, you get a maximum range of about 200 kilometers. Iran has munitions that can range up to 2,500, maybe a little bit more if the wind is right, in range. But here's the other thing. And if you listen to Pete Hegseth and you take what he's saying is true, then I got a bridge to sell you in the desert. Pete Hegseth said that the Navy was destroyed. Well, Iranian's Persian Gulf aged Navy was destroyed in terms of their sea fleet, their surface fleet. They still have submarine capability. They still have asymmetric drone capability. They still have fast boat, swift boat capability, which can fire anti-ship missiles just like a multi-million dollar warship. They still have a naval maritime capability in the Strait of Hormuz. Now, they also still possess, which the United States hasn't yet touched, the Northern Fleet in the Caspian Sea. And people might say, so what? The Caspian Sea is landlocked. What are they going to do with that? Well, here's the thing. With the Caspian Sea fleet, the Northern Fleet of the Iranian IRGC Navy, they have the Northern Fleet, which has corvettes, missile boats, support vessels. They have seven Sena-class fast attack missile ships, which all have the capability to fire RGM-84 Harpoon missiles. And the Chinese, they are equipped with the Chinese C-802 missile system, which is intercept.
Okay, well, hold on. This is key because we talk about this on the show all the time. So they have Chinese anti-ship missiles. How did they get those? Do they buy those? Were they given those missiles? Were they given those recently? How does that work?
Well, believe it or not, Iran has had relations with a lot of other countries, even during U.S. sanctions.
Right.
Iran maintained military cooperation, military relations with China, Russia, France, believe it or not. The entire Northern Fleet of the Iranian Navy, their Sena-class warships, were French warships that they purchased, that they refitted with Chinese technology. They didn't steal it. They didn't steal it like Israel did. They got it through military sales and military cooperation. Same thing now with what China is providing to Iran directly in their missile capability and their intelligence capability. So despite the fact that the United States has had sanctions on Iran for the better part of two decades, other countries have still exchanged for India being a clear partner. The ship that the U.S. sunk, the Navy warship that the U.S. sunk in the very beginning of this conflict that was not carrying any munitions whatsoever, that killed upwards nearly 400 Iranian sailors on an unarmed warship,
yes,
was returning from a global joint exercise with India.
Well, let's break that down, because this is one of those incidents, and we're going to cover Gaza and Lebanon as well. I'll just throw out kind of more like domestic to there, local to there. Of course, the Red Crescent aid workers, I think it was 13 of them that were just gunned down in ambulances, in like the nurse outfits. I forget what that's called, like literally like in uniform. The only reason why we know about it is because it was all on videotape and they lied about it on record. But when we're talking about stuff like this, Anthony, what were you just saying right there? Talking about the situation with Iran?
Well, no. So when you look at the overall situation in terms of the United States wants to preach to the American people, to the American citizens, that
right,
Iran is this isolated, incapable country that we're going to easily bomb into the Stone Age. We've sunk their Navy. We downed their Air Force. We are fighting this war at our will, and we can end it anytime we want. The only reason we're continuing to fight is because Donald Trump doesn't just want a deal. He wants a better deal. Well, the truth is that the Iranian military is very well equipped, very capable, and they still have a lot of capability, both in their missiles and in maritime capability, whether it's naval out of the Caspian Sea. Why do you think Israel was so concerned with Iran's Northern Fleet at the onset of this war that they committed some of their missiles to downing or sinking Iranian ships in the Caspian Sea, which they did not succeed, but they attempted to? Why would they do that if it wasn't a threat? It is a threat. because the Iranian warships in the Caspian Sea have a ballistic missile capability that can launch ballistic missiles that can range Israel. So to say that they're incapable or they're defeated is simply a lie. And it's important to show that as the U.S. missile arsenal continues to deplete, the Iranian missile capability continues to increase. And the Iranian missiles may not cost as much as a U.S. missile because of the high prices of the military-industrial complex, but it doesn't mean they're just as capable. It doesn't mean they're just as plentiful. It doesn't mean they can't reach targets and destroy them. Ask any American soldier in bases in Kuwait or in Iraq how effective an Iranian missile is.
This is the thing, right? You can say it for both Iran and for Israel. The reason why they're able to do these wars is because it's their region, right? They're fighting over it. The reason why it's so hard for us to quote unquote win is because thousands of miles away. Ultimately, like, how are we supposed to hold ground, hold territory, and control it without constantly being under threat from the people that live there? That seems to be very simple to me, but it doesn't seem like our leadership class really, you know, a lot of the voters seem to understand that, even though they got excited about and voted for the prospect of not doing this anymore and having peace. And I don't want to be gaslit on that. I don't want to forget about that. That is super key and important. I was not thinking about this 2 years ago. And you know what? I should have known. I knew pretty much immediately once I found out about Gaza that everything was, like you say all the time, a fugazi, right? But, you know, it's just when you wake up to the geopolitical reality of the World War III and the genocide and what we pay for directly, it just doesn't make any sense. I'm not trying to make like a grand moral statement about any of this stuff. I'm not some like grand moral guy. But what I will say is this is retarded. Like, seriously, like you have to really look at it from the lens of they are doing something for no reason out of spite to hurt the taxpayer. It's like, how can I make the American taxpayer suffer more? How can I make the American soldier suffer more? Oh, I know. I'll lie about having air defense and send them off to essentially a tin can base to get destroyed. And then I'll make people in America say that's patriotic. What do you think about that?
Well, platforms like yours and the ownership that you hold the administration and the media to, because the media, the mainstream media, as they call it, will hope that all of us soon forget the things that were said 4 to 5 months ago. You don't forget it. And it, you know, it is my hope, and I have every reason to believe that you will continue to hold the truth at the higher than the propaganda and gaslighting we're getting from mainstream media. And here's why. Because going all the way back to April of 2025, before Venezuela happened, before we started this war with Iran, I started looking at this because the tone from the American perspective started to sound a lot like Israel. A lot of our diplomatic language, a lot of our information in terms of coming from our administration into the world ethos began to sound a lot like Israel. And that concerned me because I've been to Gaza and I've seen what Israel is capable of. And that is not a path that we should go down. So going all the way back to April of 2025, I started keeping track of this little chart of mine on things that our president has said and things that our nation has then done based on what our president has said. And going all the way back to April of 25, more than a year ago, Trump started to threaten the bombing of Iran. And at that time, all of the talking heads and all of the analysts and the news stations all came on and said, oh, he's just talking. We wouldn't do that. That's Donald Trump playing 9,000-D chess and getting them to think this, but we're really going to do that. Well, I know that Donald Trump can't play 9,000-D chess. I don't think Donald Trump can play checkers. So when you look at the fact of what he was saying and the road we were being led down, to me, that sounded a lot like Israel feeding us what to say and pulling us like a dog on a leash right into this war, right into what we did in Venezuela. It shouldn't be lost on anybody that Netanyahu visited the United States and left back to Israel the night before we conducted this operation in Venezuela. It shouldn't be lost on anybody that Netanyahu visited the United States and left a couple days before we started the attacks on Iran. That shouldn't be lost on anybody in terms
of the connection. So he literally, he comes over here as the royal king, as the owner of America, and then the next day we get in a massive war, repeatedly. Break this down.
He He visits for two things. One, to reassure that the United States, through Donald Trump, is kissing the ring. Kiss the ring, America. Who's in charge? Two, to get his laundry done. We know he has his laundry done at the White House.
Literally.
So you can predict a Netanyahu visit based on when the laundry is due and when we're probably going to start the next war.
Wow. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's this sick parade, because here's the thing. This political plantation that keep people on both sides of the aisle, Democrat, Republican. Oh, it's a war. We hate each other. Oh, gun rights. Ah, to trade, taxes, all this stuff. The reality is they all stand up and give him like 12 standing ovations every single time he goes to Congress. They don't agree on anything else. They don't even agree on the Pledge of Allegiance like that. They don't seriously. It's quite wild.
You know, we should take all of the strong dissenting party bicameral fissure causing issues in the United States, and just get Netanyahu to say it, and the entire Congress would get behind it.
Yep, you're right. He could fix it overnight. You know, they'd be able to fix the roads. They'd be able to, you know, fix the airline companies, like whatever people are struggling with. Because when he snaps his fingers, lightning comes out. And that's the reality for everybody in our executive branch, legislative branch. I don't really know about the judicial, but I mean, if you look at the laws that get passed, they're all in the service of Israel. So does it even matter?
And I'll tell you, as much as that is true, to think that our military strategy or our military resources or our missiles or the most important thing are America's sons and daughters who are sitting in bases right now. People think when they hear about Kuwait, right? How many, just off the top without looking it up, if someone said U.S. bases in Kuwait, how many do you think the average American thinks that we have manned U.S. service members on bases in Kuwait? How many would you think?
Maybe 2,000 or something. I don't know.
No, numbers of soldiers, but how many bases?
Maybe let's say three or four.
Three or four, right? No,
yeah.
Eight.
Wow.
Eight. We have eight currently manned operational bases in Kuwait, which the totality of the manned bases prior to about a month ago when we withdrew a lot of forces from Camp Arif John, which is where Army Central is located, Army Central's forward headquarters. If you consider the totality of those eight bases in Kuwait, we had upwards of about 4,000.
And they can't be defended, and they're at risk and getting blown up. We'll be right back.
They
we'll be right
be
back
defended.
With Anthony Aguilar. Thank you so much.
Alex Jones is off the air.
There's a lot of noise right now.
Taking me off the air. It is beyond essential that you continue to spread the word about the broadcast and continue to support us.
That's usually when it matters most, to have people in your corner who don't flinch. We've been a partner of this program and of Alex's for a long time.
I'm handing out ice water in the Sahara. I mean, it is such the top rated, the biggest company, because they're the best. And he's a patriot.
We're not going anywhere, and that commitment runs to you. Here's the part that matters. With us, it's 8% when you buy and 0% when you sell. And here's something else. After you make your first purchase and become a client, if you're holding metals you bought somewhere else, bring them to us. We'll help you liquidate them. No commission. That means even if you didn't originally buy them from us, we'll still take care of you. That's not a promotion. It's not something that's for a limited time only. That's just the way we do business. Give us a call and we'll bend over backwards to help you.
Visit kepm.com/gold to get started, or give us a call at 720-605-3900 and let us help you make room for what matters most.
Spot price of the metal in the ground. Miners haven't even touched it yet. Then they pull the metal out of the ground. They dig their tunnels. They drive it to the refinery. They melt it down, make it into a coin or a bar. That's wholesale. That's usually 3% to 5% over spot. We charge 8% on top of wholesale. When you liquidate, we charge zero.
Buy gold and silver bullion at wholesale. You can look every day what the price is. Type in what's wholesale gold and silver. And then you get it from them with a little processing fee. And then they buy it back for nothing with no cost. That's unprecedented. It's so easy. KPM.com/gold.
You get a free telephone consultation, email. You can call 720-605-3900, 720-605-3900.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.